Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I am Jim Galazzi. He is on Sports Illustrated, Big Ten writer, Dustin Schutte. Dustin, how are we doing today?
I am doing great, Jim. I have to admit that it is like 60 degrees outside right now before a cold front comes in. So I took the dog on a walk, turned the heat off, and just enjoying this spring-like day before we get into back down to the 30s and even the 20s. So I am doing great today. How are you?
I'm not quite 60 degrees good, just to let everybody know. Tell them where you are at, Dustin, so no one's like, what the hell? It's cold here. Where is he?
I am in St. Louis, so I'm a little bit further south than Pennsylvania. So I am, yes, but we don't worry. We will be getting the cold spell back, but you have to enjoy these days. I wish I'd have known beforehand because I might have tried to sneak in nine holes if I'd have known.
But, well, that's what I was going to ask you about. You know, you've got an issue. Now, I have a buddy of mine. He's down in Orlando or outside Orlando visiting his son. And I just checked in with him this morning. He got back to me. He said it's 55 degrees there. So you're doing better than Orlando. How's that?
How about that? You know, I lived in Orlando for a little bit. You know, the only problem there, Jim, is the golf is so damn expensive. I could never play. I could go to other places in Central Florida, but you got to drive an hour. Everything in Orlando is owned by Jack Nicklaus or Tiger Woods or whatever. So it costs a pretty penny.
Well, he did send me some pictures of golf courses from in the car. He said as he was driving by, he took pictures of golf courses. Anyway, you got last thing, because I just saw this morning, one of the local places, driving ranges that has the golf simulators inside. My initial reaction, I am not, you know, do the golf simulator thing. I'm not one of those guys. But boy, was it tempting.
Yes. So you've never done it?
I think I did it once and I didn't like it.
Okay. It's terrible. So I'm just going to preface this. I know I'm not a good golfer, but I'm way better than what the simulator is. When you see me hit the golf ball and it's like it goes 80 yards, I'm like, okay, I can hit a drive further than 80 yards. even on my worst shot, I hit it. So I don't like those either. I do enjoy Topgolf though.
Tell me more. I haven't been to a Topgolf. I've seen them. There's none of them really close, but I've seen them, you know, out and about. So
it's kind of like a giant bowling alley, but for golf. And you can do, they have like different games. So they got different targets set up and you can get different points. So even if you're not really like an avid golfer or not really good at it, if the ball bounces on the ground and then gets into, you know, one of the three rings around one of the pins, you can still get points. So it's a fun way for like golfers and non-golfers to enjoy. And then they got food and beverages and all kinds of stuff. So, but you actually hit a golf ball. It's not a simulator. It's actually hitting the golf ball. If you want to go out there and just practice your shot, you can. It's like it's somewhat of a glorified driving range too. It's a lot of fun, but I've done the simulator before and it sucks.
Okay, good. Then I won't miss it. I won't go. And okay, let's just bottom line it. We need actual 60 degree weather for real. Go out and play real golf. All right, Dustin, let's move on. It's National Championship Week. It's Indiana versus Miami. And refresh my memory. I'm trying to recall. I think that's the two teams you had for the finals, is it not?
Yeah, I think I predicted it last, like, February, that it would have been Indiana and Miami in the championship game, as we all predicted.
Yes, and it's amazing the change in the game with just a few years ago. You start every season with Ohio State, Alabama, and Georgia. Right there, you had the three teams that could win a national championship. And it kind of leads to, I talk to a lot of people who are so negative about the college football game right now. The portal, NIL, oh, the game's awful now. It's changed terribly. And I understand some of the sentiment, but is there not, Dustin, a straight line between the portal and NIL and getting to this, and you got to admit, a whole lot more parity in the game?
Yeah, so I think that there's a legitimate, I'm going to talk about both things here, why I think there's positives and negatives. So the one, I'm going to speak to the negative first. The negative is when I was growing up, bowl games and regular season games, we've talked about this before, like they were their own individual entity. Like it was really awesome to go watch that football game. It was really a big deal to go if your team made it to a bowl game. At least it was growing up, you know, when I was growing up, that stuff was a big deal. And it was like, there were teams, like I grew up obviously near Purdue. Purdue was never in the national championship conversation, but it didn't decrease the value of the sport. It didn't decrease the value of each game. It was still fun to try to get to a bowl game. There was a lot of, you know, there was a lot of regionality to it. And I do believe a lot of that is gone. So you don't get like, it seems like when we talk about Penn State, and I'm just using this as an example, did we talk about their first three games? Did we talk about a couple of those other games? You know, before we knew what Penn State was going to be, did we talk about UCLA and Northwestern? We didn't talk about those games. It was Oregon, Indiana, and Ohio State. Those were the three games that Penn State was going to be judged on. And I feel like on a grander scale, that's what we do now, is we don't worry about who, you know, Ohio State playing X, Y, and Z. It's Ohio State playing Penn State or Oregon or Michigan. And there's like three games that matter. So I understand, like, it feels to a large degree like a lot of the regular season has been diminished. The bowl games aren't as important. On the flip side of that, now you have teams like Miami, who was 10-2. You have a program like Indiana, who is the second losingest program in college football history. You've got James Madison and Tulane. Ole Miss, who was a bottom feeder in the SEC for a long time. All of those programs had a chance to compete for a national championship. And a large reason why is because you can pay players now. You can entice them to stay. The transfer portal, they're able to pick up talented pieces, whether that's a large influx of talent or whether it's a, you know, a few pieces to kind of fit the voids here and there. It's really kind of evened the playing field to a large degree. Now, you obviously still have to have a good donor base. You have to have a good alumni base to be able to participate. But more teams are in the national championship hunt, and I think that's what people wanted. But I do understand the idea that if you're not in those, if you're not in the 12-team playoff, a lot of those bowls just don't matter. Somehow, though, the Pop-Tarts Bowl has been fantastic, and they've found a marketing way to make that bowl game relevant. I wish more bowls kind of followed that method, but that's neither here nor there. There are positives and negatives about all the changes in college football, but if you want more parity and you want more teams having a chance to play for a national championship, then there's no question that NIL and the transfer portal have helped that.
Well, some of the things, I do believe the bowl games have been lessened in their value, and I get that, although to your point, you know, the Pop-Tart Bowl, and I believe viewership in general is up for the bowl games, which I'm not sure how that's happening when you got everybody crying about they're no good anymore. But I'll go watch them anyway. Where I will question you is on the value of the regular season. There was just a few years ago with the 4-team playoff, you better go undefeated or at worst lose one game. A second loss, you're eliminated. And for a lot of teams, even one loss and they were eliminated. And that has changed. And I believe with, you know, the 12-team playoff, you go towards the end of the regular season, you still have 20, maybe 20 teams still involved. So at the end of the regular season, there's actually more at stake in some of those games. Now, I think fan mindset may have changed a little bit where, you know, there were teams who at one time hey, I'm shooting for 8 or 9 wins this year, so it'll be a good season. And the fact is that they don't make a 12-team playoff, you know, all of a sudden, does that devalue the games? I don't think it should. And is that Biscuit who's looking to contradict me?
Yeah, he's wanting to chime in on all this. He's got opinions in the backyard. I'm going to let him in here shortly, I think. I agree with you. I think the regular season is more valuable than it's probably ever been because you do have more teams that are in the mix until, you know, early to mid-November, and they still have a chance to punch their ticket to compete for a national championship. I guess my point was maybe from like a media coverage standpoint, everything now from August through that last week is all about the playoff. It doesn't, it's almost like those weeks in the regular season don't matter. And that's what I was talking about. Like, yeah, we talked a lot about Penn State just, but we only talked about them playing those three big games really. And the same thing goes for Ohio State, Alabama, you name the team. And so I think the regular season is more valuable to every team in college football. I just think from, and this is not any fault of college football, I just think from the media perspective, everything has become so college football playoff driven that it's not maybe perceived to be the same game that it once was.
I think you are right with that. And I think it manifests itself in the lack of value to a conference championship. You know, Indiana plays Ohio State for the conference championship, and I think there was value this year to it because Indiana had something to prove to everyone, which they did by beating Ohio State. But the result was important because, oh, it's a Big Ten championship. It was more about positioning for the playoffs, and that's all that really mattered.
Yeah, because there was no real reason to play that game. I mean, you know, it was like those teams wanted to win a Big Ten championship. Don't get me wrong, but like those teams were going to be number one and number two. As long as it was a close game, which it was, those teams were going to be number one and number two. They were both going to earn byes in the college football playoffs. So, you know, from a risk reward standpoint, the risk to me outweighed the reward in that specific game. But, yeah, I mean, I think, again, everything was just, it's viewed through the college football playoff lens, and I understand it. Like, a lot of, once you get to February, things are viewed as through a March Madness lens in college basketball. That's what happens. It just feels like it's a lot longer for college football, and maybe it's because everything is changing and everything is still so new that we went from 4 to 12, and now we're discussing 16, that we don't know maybe quite how to cover it appropriately just yet.
Very good, Dustin. That is it for quarter one. We got lots more to talk about when we come back.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello, welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Dustin. I'm Jim. Dustin is over there laughing out loud. Are you laughing at me or at Biscuit?
I told you in the break, I said the dog is not going to drink. I was trying to encourage him to drink his water. I just let him in from outside, and I told you he wasn't going to drink it until we started recording the second segment. And sure enough, you do the introduction, and he just starts lapping up water. Just impeccable. He's so smart, yet so dumb.
I think he's toying with you, Dustin.
I think so, yes.
Okay. Anyway, let's get back to this playoffs. Here's what I do like, Dustin, where when the playoffs went from 4 teams to 12, I think you and I were both advocates of the 12 teams, and I think we're advocates of it mostly because it meant more college football, which we both love. The folks against us said, gee, there's barely 4 teams typically capable of winning a national championship, and you're going to put 12 teams in? Well, I think this year, really, and last year, both, as the 2 years of the 12-team playoffs, have really put an end to that talk. I think there is no doubt this was the right way to go with the 12 teams.
Yeah, well, if you want to look at it from a seeding standpoint, Miami is a 10 seed. And what was Ohio State last year, 8 or 9? Now, I don't think anybody believes that Ohio State was the 8th best team. It was just how the seeding worked out and how they had it formatted last year.
But that was a 2-loss Ohio State team who, right, in another year would have never, even if we thought they were the best team in the country, they weren't going to be one of the 4 teams in the playoffs.
Right. So to that point, then you look at it every year and you think, well, maybe there are 12 teams that are capable of competing for a national championship. My argument was always when we expanded to 12 and there were people that said, you know, one of the things was it's going to devalue the regular season. My argument for that was always, well, the regular season didn't matter for the group of 5 anyway. So you eliminated half of your participants before you even have the first kickoff, because none of those teams were going to make the playoff in the first place. The other part of it to me was, well, there's very rarely going to be more than, you know, 5 or 6 teams that are legitimately national championship contenders. And my counter to that was for now, because you look at the NCAA tournament again, how long did it take before we started getting 13, 14, 15, 16 seeds to upset the higher seeds? It took a while. And now we see some of those major upsets every single year, right? And that's not that's not the number 12 team in the country versus the number 1 team in the country. That's the number 65, 66, 67, 60, probably even lower than that, if we're being honest, when you look at KenPom and net rankings, and those upsets happen. And so anytime you expand a field and a player can say, I can win a national championship at Ole Miss, I can win a national championship at Indiana, you know, wherever it might be, you're going to thin out the talent pool in terms of, yeah, Ohio State's still going to get, and Alabama and Michigan, those schools are still going to get top end talent. But now some of those 4 and 5-star kids can say, I can get a pretty good NIL opportunity at Indiana. I can play and I can still compete for a national championship. Whereas in the past, you really had to pick 1 of 7 or 8 schools if you thought you had a chance to compete for a national title.
And that is it. And a couple of them for these players, for a lot of, there's opportunity. If you're potentially a good quarterback as a backup, hey, I could go somewhere else and play. You know, at Penn State, we've seen it over the years. A year ago, it was Bo Prabula sitting behind Drew Aller. And as soon as he finds out Drew Aller is returning, he gets an opportunity he won't start this year at Penn State. Hey, he finds a willing player in Missouri, where he could go there, make starter money, and get his opportunity. So at the quarterback position, we see it most, but it's a lot of the other talent. And I think the other part of the equation is there was not a route a few years ago for teams other than those at the very top of the pecking order to put together a national championship team. Now, and we've talked about these teams before, you know, Texas Tech, I know they were disappointing in the playoffs, but they put themselves in a position to be a playoff team. And I think you and I thought they would represent themselves much better than they did. Mm-hmm. But you also see, you know, teams like an SMU who could throw some money at it. And of course, there's Indiana, who they threw a coach at it. They, you know, made good use of the transfer portal, bringing along his James Madison players. And as I always say, it's at the quarterback position. And Kurt Cignetti is 2 for 2 bringing in very good portal quarterbacks. And I will also point out where it's not just the money thing, it's identifying the talent. How many people were knocking down Fernando Mendoza's door last year to bring him in.
Yeah, not a lot, because he was like a quarterback that was, you know, had basically as many touchdowns as interceptions. I think Kurt Cignetti has identified what he wants in his quarterback, and I think he knows that his offensive scheme, you know, he He can get the ball to the playmakers. They have a better offensive line. He's just really perfected this. And I always make the joke that he ruined college football through no fault of his own, because everybody now expects, like, well, if Kurt Cignetti did it, then why can't we do it? Well, because he's one of a kind type of coach. And that's not to say teams can't build through the portal and have really good seasons, but I don't think that anybody else is going to have that sort of instant success. And even if they did, like, even if Matt Campbell went, you know, 13-0, got to the playoff, won a Big Ten championship, Penn State's not in the same position that Indiana was. Indiana was the worst team in college football history, and all of a sudden now, on Monday night, they'll compete for a national championship. So it's hard to replicate what he's done, but because of the transfer portal, and you want, like, the other part of this, too, is he's not even – a lot of those – they've got – what was the number, Jim? 8 4- and 5-star players, and then Oregon had 55 or something like that? But he also went after experience, where he got, he's got, what is it, 45? I sent you this message the other day. I've got to bring it up real quick.
Indiana has 45 players with 4+ years of experience.
Yes, and 47 players that are between ages 22 and 25. There are 140 players in the NFL that are ages 21 and 22. So it's not even just about star rating. If you have a 25-year-old grown-ass man who's still able to play football and you can bring him in, like, that's a big part of this equation too.
And it's interesting, and it took us, or at least it took me, this long to see it. We looked at the last 2 years of Michigan and Ohio State winning a national championship, and we thought, hey, the secret sauce was each of those teams was able to bring back much of their core, guys who might have otherwise moved on to the NFL. We thought that was the secret sauce. What it actually might be, Dustin, is they're bringing back veteran guys. And, you know, we thought, oh, that's not a portal type team. They kept their own talent. But it seems like Kurt Cignetti, he's bringing in these mature players, because the interesting thing is, I made the joke, he is, you know, he's spoiling parity with all his 3-star guys. And, you know, the example was Oregon had, 55 guys who were 4 or 5-star players, and Indiana had 8 of them. So where is that advantage he's getting? Might it be that's the new key, these veteran players, you know. A 23-year-old 3-star might be better than your 4-star 19.
Well, common sense would tell you they have a higher football IQ just because they've been around the game longer. And then I think I mentioned this too, like, there's also people, because people in the NBA talk about this, there's a difference between weight room strength and grown men strength. And, you know, the grown men strength comes in from playing, you know, 40 plus games and from being through practices for 3 to 5 years and doing all this stuff that it takes to win. Whereas opposed to and I'm not throwing shade at Oregon here, but if you've got a bunch of 4 and 5-star guys that are 19 years old, they don't have the same football IQ. They don't have the same grown men. They still might be strong. They don't have the same grown men strength. And so I think that stuff absolutely makes a difference. And he finds players that fit into his system, but that experience to me is showing to be more and more valuable, especially in this 12 team playoff, especially when you know how to use it like he does.
Exactly. And I think the other part to this equation is, when everyone was gaining talent from the high school ranks, pretty much exclusively, I would prefer the 4-star guy over the 3-star guy. But for every 4-star player out there, I don't know what the math is, there's 5 3-stars or 10 3-stars that are also coming into college football. Now, instead of basing your ranking on just high school development of a player who maybe playing in a great conference, maybe playing in a small school against very little talent, it's hard to compare that. But once you get them into college, I can judge that 3-star player who's got 2 years in the college much better than I could judge that 4-star who only has high school experience. So, you know, just start with the quarterback position. There's a lot of 4 and 5-star quarterbacks out of high school who never make it. By going for a portal player, I see a guy who's already got 2 years of college experience, and I'll take that guy who's already proven himself as a three-star in college over the guessing game of the four-star coming out of high school.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things that they value at IU is that, you know, the production over potential. And that is, I don't care what this guy was rated as a high school. I don't care if he was the number, one overall player in the class. If he was, had to redshirt last year, or he wasn't very productive on the field. You know, these coaches know more than the recruiting analysts. That's the words I was looking for there. But if you have a three-star guy who at the wide receiver position caught 55 passes for 600 yards and 5 or 6 touchdowns, you know that guy can produce. Now, it probably depends on competition a little bit, probably depends on where he played. But at the same time, he's already proven he can be productive, whereas the other guy, you're just kind of waiting and seeing. So I do think that I will be interested. I think that there's been a little bit of an uptick in coaches who are now starting to value more of the production standpoint as opposed to the potential. But obviously, when you have so many players in the portal, you're going to have to take a chance on a few guys. But how many times, Jim, do you see some of these 4 and 5 star guys that are at, I don't know, Auburn, and then they have to move on somewhere else?
We'll talk more about that, Dustin, as soon as we come back.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Dustin, I'm Jim. We're talking college football. It's quarter number 3 of our show. And Dustin, when we finished up last segment, you were talking about the star system, the rankings for these players coming out of high school. And, a 4 or 5 star ranking is no guarantee, okay? Mm-hmm. It's an inexact science. Yeah, I always say, I will take my chances with, a roster full of 4 and 5 stars against your roster full of 3 stars. But as they start to play, a year or two of college, I'd like to do a reshuffle and rejudgment. And it's interesting to watch the process that's going on at Penn State right now, similar to what went on in Indiana, in that you have a coach coming in who's bringing in a lot of talent from his old team, guys who know the system, and you're also clearing out a lot of the current roster. And from the Penn State fan perspective, there's a lot of anxiety over this. Oh, you're bringing in all these 3-star players from Iowa State. Well, you're also, and Penn State fans will know what I'm talking about, the two highest ranked players in their class from 3 years ago were offensive linemen. They both have 3 years time on campus at Penn State. One of them was even a 5-star. They are both gone in this whole purging of the Penn State roster. One of them ended up at Liberty. The other one's going to Charlotte. Those are your 4-star and 5-star players, Dustin.
Yeah, I mean, because if you get to a point where these guys aren't productive, then they're going to have to go down to the next level. And that's what I think you're starting to see that more and more. I don't want to say it's frequent, but it's not uncommon for 4 and 5-star guys to move schools. And it's becoming less common for some of those 4 and 5-star guys to move down a rung. Even if, let's say you're at Ohio State, you might be going to Illinois. or you might be going, and you know, whatever the case might be. So you may have to take a step down, because it's all about production now. And especially like when you can go in the portal and you can instantly replace somebody and say, you know, coaches don't have to be patient anymore. And first of all, is because the players aren't very patient anymore either. But number, if you have an offensive tackle who is just not developing, he was a four-star kid, you know, maybe he started out as a backup as a freshman. You think, okay, we still like this kid a lot. The second year, not much better, still has to be a backup. And then you have your starting offensive tackle who graduates. We don't think this guy is very good. Our backup's very good and can start. We got to go get somebody. And so, you don't have to be, I think a lot of coaches still want to develop players from the high school level. I think but you also have to save your job. Like it seems like you get 2, maybe 3 years anymore and you have to start producing. And so there's just a lot of factors involved here, but yeah, it's all about production at this stage. And the 4 and 5 stars mean very little anymore. They did mean a lot. I'm sure there's some statistic and probably still very relevant as to the number of 4 and 5 star kids you have on your roster and how that translates to national championships. But Indiana has a chance to really kind of buck that trend here if they win it. And maybe even to an extent, Miami. I don't know what Miami in terms of their high school recruiting, but I know that they had a lot of transfers. So it'd be interesting to see what their star rankings were out of high school. But point being is both of these teams have been very successful thanks to the portal. And to your point, that you like to talk about, both of them with transfer quarterbacks.
Yes, both of them with transfer quarterbacks, and both of them in their starting lineup, over 50% of their starting lineups are portal players. And, you know, that is really interesting. It tells you just how much effect the portal has. But also going through this, it's only been 2 years that we have the 12-team playoff, but we're starting to see some trends, some things here, and some of it points to parity. First of all, the 4 teams that are getting the bye week are a combined 1-7 over the 2 years of the 12-team playoff. The other number that I kind of like for this year is that the lower seeds have a winning record in this playoff. They are 6-4, Dustin. To me, that just screams of a new parity that we would have never have dreamed of just even a few years ago.
And 2 of those wins were from the number one team in the country, which is Indiana. So you could even make the argument that even though the number one seed is 2-0 and looks like the best team in college football, who would have ever thought 2 years ago we would be talking about it being Indiana? Right. So even the point where you have the top seeds winning, nobody would have ever expected a team like Indiana to be in that mix. So I think all the way around this year's playoff, even more than last year's, I think proves that the sport is growing in terms of teams being able to make a run that traditionally just had zero chance of even being in the national championship conversation.
And I think the media, we are just catching up with this trend, the difference. And I thought was interesting, prior to the playoffs beginning, somebody asked Joel Klatt, who I respect his opinion. I think he's very good. And it was a great question. They asked, of the teams not getting a bye, of the non-top 4 teams, the teams playing in the first round, how many of them have a legitimate shot to play in the championship game? His answer was none. He felt like the top 4, those are your best teams. They're far and away. And to me, that was an old school answer. It was looking at how the game was played half a decade ago when you only had 3 or 4 teams capable of winning. Now, hey, the number one team is still there, but the next 3, they were eliminated after their first game, Dustin, and a number 10 seed in Miami, who some people argue didn't belong in there, that it should have been Notre Dame instead of them. I think they kind of answered that question, though.
Yeah, I think that they proved that they belonged to be in that conversation, and obviously now they're playing in a national championship game. Yeah, that is an interesting point. I still think that there's this default to just talk about Ohio State, Alabama, in some regards, even Texas, some of these other traditional powers, just because people aren't quite ready to know what's happening in college. Like, they still can't grasp what's happening. Like, Ole Miss, again, Ole Miss was the Indiana of the SEC for the longest time. Now, I think they had a few more successful years sprinkled in there than Indiana did, but they were a bottom feeder, and all of a sudden they were competing for a national championship. Indiana doing what they're doing. A couple group of five teams, I thought, even though they didn't, you know, put up great fights, I still think it's great to have them included in the mix. Yeah, I had not thought about that, but there is a level of like the old school, even some Joel Klatt's relatively new to the broadcast, and he's still of the mindset of like, you know, kind of going by the name on the jersey type situation. And I think that's probably going to be the hardest thing to kind of disassociate with college football. And maybe we get back to a point where those 8 to 12 teams are consistently in the mix again. I think those days are probably in the rearview mirror.
Well, yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see how long will it take for an Alabama Indiana game not to make our mindset be Alabama's the better team. Why? Well, they're Alabama. And, you know, by the way, if you didn't see the game, Alabama got schooled by Indiana. And, you know, it's an opportunity to talk about the Southeast Conference in general. You name teams like Texas and Alabama and Georgia. The Southeast Conference, only they had five teams in the tournament. They only had one win that wasn't against a fellow SEC team, and that was Ole Miss over Tulane. Otherwise, you know, when they played someone outside their conference, they lost. We saw it in the bowl games. And oh, by the way, did I mention Indiana schooled Alabama, Dustin? So were we wrong all along to think the SEC was the bad boys of the country, or is it just now it's an even playing field because everybody else could pay the players the way they did for so many years under the table?
I think the second part has a lot to do with it. I legitimately think that is a big part of this. What I would say too is when the SEC was kind of pounding its chest as the best conference in college football over the Big Ten, and this is when there was a 4-team playoff, I never disputed that. Like I never thought the SEC wasn't the best team. But my argument was like the SEC views the Big Ten the way the Big Ten views the MAC, and that just wasn't the case. There were times when, like, basically the two conferences were the same. The SEC just had that second team. It was Alabama and Georgia. It was LSU and Georgia, or, you know, insert a team here or there, whatever the case might be. And the Big Ten really only ever had one team, and it was mostly Ohio State. Towards the end, it was Michigan. But I do think the fact that everybody's paying players, like, it's no secret that all of a sudden this NIL thing happens, and all of us, now we're going to have at least two and maybe three in a row Big Ten champions, and three different Big Ten, like three different national champions from the Big Ten in Michigan, Ohio State, and Indiana. But at the very least, the Big Ten has participated in the last three national championship games. The SEC has been nowhere to be found. And it couldn't have made me happier because all the grandstanding and banging on pots and pans that Greg Sankey did in the offseason to talk about, well, strength of schedule, boop, boop, boop. Well, it's easy to have strength of schedule when 10 of your teams are ranked in the AP poll before you even kick the season off.
And the other part to this, again, was that 8-game schedule in the Southeast mm-hmm. Conference. Something I pointed out before is, you know, because of that, Texas A&M, one of the five teams making the playoffs from the Southeast Conference, they did not have a regular season game against any of the other four playoff teams. So there's instant respect for a team that goes 11-1 in the Southeast Conference, but when you point out that they played none of the four best teams in the conference, well, that kind of changes how you should be marking them.
Well, and what was the biggest knock against Indiana last year?
They didn't have the schedule.
Correct. They played one good team, which was Ohio State, and they lost that game by 3 touchdowns or whatever the final score was. So, and it was a fair criticism last year, but damn sure didn't hear anything about that from Texas A&M on this side, did you? That was never even a talking point.
No, Dustin, we did not hear that. We did not, which is why we have you here, Dustin. to point out those things. That's why you're here. All right, that is it for quarter number three. When we come back, I'm going to ask Dustin about the future of the college football playoffs when we come back.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Dustin, I'm Jim. We're talking college football. It's quarter number four of our show. And Dustin, I teased that we would take a look at the future of the college football playoffs. And this is partly how the contract works. During this offseason, the powers that be in college football, powers that be, that essentially means the commissioners of the Big Ten and the Southeast Conference, they get to discuss changes. Now, you and I will often talk about, well, gee, it's such a small sample set. We've only had 2 years of the 12-team playoffs. But has there been enough that we've seen that it's time for a change? And the most predominant change they're talking about is taking this from a 12-team playoff to a 16-team playoff, Dustin.
Yeah. In terms of sample size, I don't think 2 years is good enough for any of it. But here's what I would say. I'm in favor of whether it's 12 teams or 16 teams. I don't care. If you want to keep allow those teams to have a first round bye, that's fine, even though I don't think that's been – I do think there is something to be said for a 1-7 record across 2 years, even though it's not a big sample size. What I would do and what I would suggest, and I think you even mentioned this before on previous shows, is I want the first two rounds on campuses. So if you stay at 12, great. But then those four teams that got a bye get to also play a home game. And if you go 16, then great. But you have the first rounds on home campuses and then the round of eights. And then if you want to go to the final four and have, you know, Sugar Bowl and Rose Bowl and then the final championships played wherever, the Cotton Bowl or whatever, that's fine with me. But that's the one change. I don't really care that much about 12 or 16. I think we've probably proven that. And I mean, Notre Dame's probably the only other team that you could look at and say they had a legit shot to make a run. But I don't think there's going to be a huge discrepancy. I think what you would see with 16 teams is what you've seen with 12. At some point, a full 16 team slate would be able to, a lot of those teams would be able to make a run. So I don't really care. I just want to see the first two rounds played on campuses.
I'm okay with 16 teams in that. I think we've seen already in these 2 years, set aside the James Madison and Tulane, were they, you know, among the 12 best teams in the country? No, they weren't. Did they earn their way in? I think yes, because I think you do need to give the group of five that opportunity. And if it's going to be typically one and maybe somehow two teams, if it's two out of 16 as opposed to two out of 12, there's less effect there. And with 16 teams, everybody plays first week. And as you put most importantly in all of this, Dustin, how about when we think about the fans in this equation and the opportunity to see your team play and putting these games on campus, which is what makes it so special. These stadiums are unique. They're fun. They're special. And, you know, I know I've mentioned it before, being in attendance a year ago at Beaver Stadium when Penn State hosted SMU, no matter how cold it was, and believe me, it was cold, it was a special place to be. And even just watching on TV the home games, both last year and this year, that's a pretty special event. And to give the home team fans the opportunity to go, without having to spend big money on travel and hotels and everything else, it's special. So to your point of two rounds of home games, Dustin, I'm ready to make you the czar of college football for that idea alone.
No, thank you. I don't know that that's a job that I want, but because I think people would find out how good I'm or how bad I am at running things. But yeah, I mean, I think that would be the I think that's the easiest solution. And it's just like you said, it should be, you know, being in those top four spots should be a reward. And, you know, we've seen this with baseball, you know, in teams in the playoffs that get byes and they don't it's not necessarily a reward. It's supposed to be, but it doesn't. And so, again, I don't know if 2 years is enough, but I think a 1-7 record would kind of indicate like, hey, maybe having 3 weeks off or whatever the number of weeks off between games isn't the best scenario for some of these teams. So, again, I don't care whether it's 12 or 16. I just want to see the first two rounds played on campuses. And I think that would probably fix. I don't know if fix is the right word. I think it would enhance the college football playoff moving forward.
Well, the other thing that I have no doubt we're going to see is also improvement in the tiebreaker system for the conferences. We saw a situation where a 5-loss Duke got in because of a very confusing, convoluted tiebreaking system. Whereas if they had used what you would think would be automatic, how about using the college football playoff rankings to break the tie? You know, the team that Miami was a better team than Duke, and they are tied within the conference record. But Duke, somehow with their 5 losses, they won the tiebreaker. That makes no sense. And I think you're going to have to see that across the board. Conferences are going to improve their tiebreaker method.
Yeah, I was honestly a little bit surprised. I will give the ACC some credit in the fact that it didn't go full Big Ten and change its rules at the end of the season. So it didn't pull a Kevin Warren. But yeah, I think they'll probably have to improve that because it's all about, you know, for these conferences, it's about getting the most teams in. And the ACC just didn't put itself in a good position to do that. And so I'm sure that they'll have some conversations, if they haven't already, this offseason about enhancing or improving the tiebreaker, and maybe even it's something as simple as we'll go by overall record. Now, I think that there's a little bit of trickiness to that because you could have a team that plays, just as an example, 11 Power 5 games, and then you have a team that plays an FCS and two MAC teams or whatever the case might be. So it may not be. But if it's a difference of about 3 games, then maybe you should look at the overall general record, right? Because you have to give yourself a good, and I don't know what the answer is, but I think that they'll probably do something to correct that so they don't have a similar situation.
Well, I think the college football rankings make sense because they are already telling you, mm-hmm. we regard Miami more highly than we regard Duke. Now, if Duke has the better conference record than Miami, hey, that's, you know, that's right. The way it's played. That's the situation. But if they have a tie, let's make the rules where Miami being more highly ranked means they've got a better chance to make the playoffs than the lower ranked Duke team does. Now, the other part of the equation, and, you know, shame on, you know, Tony Petitti and the Big Ten, they're pushing for the 24-team playoff. And it's, even if they don't get it immediately, they want to get it within a couple of years. I've been an advocate, you know, when it went from 4, my first thought was make it to 8. When it's 12, I was happy with that. Now I'm pushing for 16 and happy about it. But if even I'm saying 24 is too many, that should tell you something, Dustin.
Yeah, I think that then it just gets to be too long, too many teams, and I do think you start to lose some of the value of it. So I would, whatever the expansion is, if they expand, whether they stay at 12 or go to 6, like I said, I'm fine with either number at this point, but you can't, I don't think 24 is a good place to be, especially because I feel like at that point it gets a little bit to the NCAA tournament where you're going to have the 6th team in the Big Ten or the 6th team in the SEC probably get a spot, and nobody wants to watch 7-5 Iowa get in and not play any offense, right? Like that's the scenario you're going to find yourself in if they expand to 24 at some point. Maybe not every year, but I think a lot of And as you mentioned, the Big Ten and the SEC kind of run the show. So they'll be pushing for those 7-5, 8-4 teams to, well, they're pretty, even though they didn't have the best record, you know, they were pretty good this year. And we don't want that. We still with 12 teams, I think you're still in a good spot where almost everybody's at 2 losses. Maybe you have a 3 loss team in the conversation, but you feel pretty good about your field.
I think that's the point where you're actually are cheapening the regular season. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I can justify a 10-2 team making, you know, Miami's an example. 9-3, maybe pushing it a little bit, but I can still see it because I could see a 9-3 team getting through and winning. I can't see those 6-5 or 7-5 teams and, you know, God forbid we end up with 6-6 and making the playoffs. Right. And you know, those conferences will be pushing for the automatic bids, and then we'll do a playoff game for fourth place. And all of a sudden 6-6 is playing for that playoff berth, Dustin. Can't have that.
Yeah. Yeah. We don't want to get it to its too thinned out. And I still think, you know, there's times when the Big Ten or the SEC, you're going to have a tough schedule. I think back to a few years ago, Purdue played Oregon, Penn State, Ohio State, Notre Dame. So they played all 4 teams that made the college football playoff. And so 9-3, that means you won all the games you're supposed to, and then you would have beat one of those playoff teams. So you could conceivably, if you lost, you know, played close, you could conceivably get 9-3. And still, again, that's the argument. You could still feel good about a 9-3 team getting in and having a legitimate chance. But you get down to 24, and again, you're talking about 8-4, and you probably have at least one ugly loss on the resume. And you probably don't have a great quality win. Yeah, you got to stop. You got to draw the line somewhere.
And that's where I draw the line. Okay, Dustin, we got a minute and a half left. We've got the national championship game coming up on Monday. Indiana, an 8.5-point favorite. Is the spread accurate? And who you got?
Yeah, it's hard for me to go against Indiana at this point, unfortunately, as people that see behind me a bunch of the Purdue stuff as I cover the Boilermakers. I think that the spread's tough for me because I see two scenarios, one where Miami's offensive and defensive line gives Indiana fits and it's a close game. The other one being Indiana just does what it has done the first two games against Alabama and Oregon and just, you know, knocks them out early. So I'm going to say Indiana wins. I think they cover too. So I think that spread's going to be irrelevant. I think it's going to be like a 14-point game.
I agree. I could see a world where Miami makes it close and it takes, you know, Indiana has the last score of the game to cover, you know, to make it 10 points or 14 points. Miami's goal will make this game into a rock fight. I saw something where, you know, their offensive line compared to Indiana's defensive line, I think, you know, they have about a 60-pound advantage across the board. You know, could they turn it into that type of game? That's going to have to be their goal. Dustin, that's got to be the final word for today. Thank you so much. Thank all of you for joining us. Make sure you join us again next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.